One of the privileges of living in our country and our nation is that we get to have elections. We get to go to the polls and we get to vote, right? It's such a joy. It's what you always look forward to, right? But here's the question. Why do you vote for the person that you vote for when you vote? Now, don't answer that out loud because we don't want to have fights in church today. But think about it. Why do you vote the way you vote? Why do you vote for the person that you vote for? If we had this discussion going on, we'd probably find that there are many different reasons why people vote for different individuals. For example, you might find that a lot of people vote for what that person promises to give to them. For example, you know, someone might say, well, that person's going to lower gas prices, so that will be really good for me, so I'll vote for that person. Or maybe it's they're going to lower healthcare costs and pharmaceutical costs and all that, which would help my bottom line, so I'm going to vote for that guy or that lady. Sometimes it might be a little bit different. Maybe it's more about social issues. Maybe it's, you know what, I'm going to vote for the guy that's going to stand against abortion, and others might say, I'm going to vote for the guy who stands in favor of pro-choice. You know, it's social issues. Where do they stand on that? And do I align with that? While others, they might still go, well, you know, it's more of an ethical vote for me. It's, I'm going to vote for the person that is the most ethical person. You know, you hear someone go, oh, I won't vote for that person because you know what kind of a person they are. They're not a good person, period. And so I just can't vote for them in that way. But if they're a good person, well, then we'll vote for them because they're a good stand-up citizen. So we'll vote for them. Sometimes even maybe the vote is strictly on how good the person looks. You know, they dress nice. They look good. They present themselves well. So I'll vote for them because they dress nice. And of course, there's always some that just vote because they want to get the I voted sticker. And so you have different reasons why you vote. But what would you do if it was coming to election time and one individual, one candidate stands up and you know, they're telling their, here's what I'm going to do, right? I'm going to change the world in 30 days. And this person gets up there and they say, here's what I'm going to do. When I come into office, I'm going to take over the world. We're going to start with Canada. We're going to invade Canada. We're going to take them. They're going to become one of our states. And then we're just going to spread out. And we're going to take over the rest of the world. And we're going to rule. And by the way, if you don't like what I have to say, then don't worry. You'll just go to prison or we'll kill you or something like that. So would you vote for that person? I mean, that sounds like a great person to vote for, right? Why would we not vote for that person if the person's like, you know, when I come in, we're going to war? We want peace, right? We don't like conflict. We don't want to go into conflict. Whenever we have, we kind of come to this place where we're like, we don't like this, we don't like that, we're going into war, so we're going to stand against it or we're going to find another way. Peace at all costs. We won't want conflict. We've been talking about the names that Jesus was called when he was brought as a child, that his name would be Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and today we're going to look at the Prince of Peace in Isaiah chapter 9. So if you have your Bibles, if you would turn there again with me, we're going to read this together like we've done the last couple of weeks. Isaiah chapter 9, starting at verse 6. Read this with me. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. In the original language, this name is Shar Shalom. Shar Shalom, Prince of Peace. And this brings into play not just a simple peace, but it brings in this lasting, ultimate, eternal peace that he's going to bring as he ushers in his new kingdom at the end. Now, when we look at the word shalom, shalom is, well, we kind of call it a greeting, but it's actually more than a greeting. If you were to go into a Jewish community or if you were to go over to Israel, one of the things that you would find is as they come together, as they approach one another, they would say the word shalom. And they might add a few other words into there, but shalom would be part of it. It's kind of like when we walk in and we come face to face with somebody, we say, hi, or good morning, you know, something like that. We greet in that way. But when you look at shalom, it's actually a much deeper greeting, goes beyond the simple hello, and actually is a blessing. And so this blessing is something that says to the person, my desire for you is wholeness, well-being, prosperity, all of the good things that God can give on you. Makes our hello look a little weak, doesn't it? But this is the Prince of Peace. And when we think about this, the Shar Shalom, what implications do we find that are a part of this name, that we have some now, but some that will be for all eternity? Probably the easiest place or the best place to start is the one that we think of the most. And that is, as Prince of Peace, there will be the absence of conflict. He will bring and establish a government or a rule that will be without conflict. I mean, imagine that, a life, a world without conflict. Have you ever remembered when your mom would say, can I just get a little bit of peace around here? Moms, have you said that? You know why, we know why moms say that, right? It's because as kids, we're getting at each other, right? We're fighting with one another. You know, it's like, Mom, they took my toy again. Mom, they messed up my room and they didn't clean it up. Mom, they're bothering me. Mom, they bit me again. You know, it's like we hear this, and what it is it's conflict that has come in. And so Mom finally goes, oh, when can I have a little bit of peace? Dad comes home, and what does Mom do? Here you go. No, it really doesn't happen that way, does it? But Mom wants peace. The constant fighting that's been happening. Maybe you've heard the phrase being said quite a bit recently, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And when we think about that word, as we say that word, why are we saying pray for the peace of Jerusalem? Well, because we understand that in this moment, or it's in a couple months ago, there was the conflict that broke out. They were at war. They were fighting. People were battling with one another. And so what we did is we don't like this. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We want the conflict to end. But we understand that in the fallen world, in the fallen nature in which we live in right now, and who we are in that fallen nature, we will not see a complete absence of conflict. This is what James talks about in James chapter 4, verse 1. When he says the words, he goes, look, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? So conflict is a part of our life today, even though he is to be called the Prince of Peace, the child unto us is called, even though we have this aspect, the reality is that we will experience conflict until he establishes his eternal kingdom. But does that mean that we will never have peace or we can't have the absence of conflict now? Well, no. As a matter of fact, we can see at times where peace does happen. As a matter of fact, in the Old Testament, we look at Joshua. Joshua was leading the children of Israel into the promised land. God had given them. He says, hey, I want you to go in. I want you to wipe out nations around you. And a couple of nations came and they kind of did a little bit of an underhanded thing. But we see in Joshua chapter 9, verse 15, these words. Then Joshua made a treaty of peace with them and let them live. And the leaders of the assembly ratified it by oath. Now the word that is here, the treaty of peace, is actually the word shalom or shalom. And that word implies in this scenario the absence of conflict. And so we see in times of history that sure, conflict has been taken aside. But as we look at Jesus, who is our Prince of Peace, we see that for all eternity, he will establish a kingdom without conflict. Now imagine that. Just think about that for a moment. All of eternity without any conflict. I think it's hard for us to get. I mean, you never have an argument. If you're a devil's advocate type of person, you're going to struggle in heaven, okay? But get it. There's no conflict, no arguing, no problems. This is great. Look at Isaiah chapter 11. So in Isaiah 9, he is called the Prince of Peace. Now, two chapters later, this is what Isaiah says. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be the belt and faithfulness the sash around his waist. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat and the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. Infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young child will put his hand in the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the water covers the seas. That's incredible. The nature of animal is one, prey and predator. If you're a predator, you're going to constantly be going and chasing after the prey. If you're the prey, you're constantly running away. Could you imagine the prey for all eternity going, I never have to run again? I'm not going to get chased. If this is what God is going to do for the animals, imagine what he will do for his people. For all eternity, there will be no more war. For all of eternity, there will be no more conflict. For all of eternity, no more fighting or arguing. It will all end. Conflict will be done away with. That should get us excited. Our Shar Shalom will bring an end to conflict. But shalom goes deeper than that. We tend to take peace, and that's what it is. Peace is the end of conflict. But peace and shalom takes it to another step, which is actually wholeness or fullness or well-being. And so when they would come together and they would say shalom to one another, what they are saying is, I'm praying a blessing of fullness, wholeness, completeness upon you. You know, when we come and we have a way in which we greet one another, don't we? It's kind of like we walk up and we're like, hey, how are you doing? Right? That's what we say. How you doing? Now, here's the question. Do we really care? You know, sometimes, have you ever found yourself doing this? You walk up and you're like, hey, how are you doing? Oh, why did I say that? Now I'm going to hear the rundown, I'm going to hear the life story, and you know, we say the words, but do we truly want to know? You see, when you say shalom, the shalom greeting is this blessing. It is as if somebody's walking up to you, and the way that they are approaching you is, I am praying God's richest blessing upon you, my friend, that you would experience his wholeness, his fullness, completeness in him. We see this actually in Genesis chapter 43, verses 27 and 28. This is the time where Joseph had been sold into slavery. He was in Egypt. The famine had occurred, and now he's standing there, and his brothers have come to get food, and they're standing before him, and he looks at them, and one of the things that he says is he asks them how they were, and then said, how is your aged father you told me about? Is he still living? They replied, your servant, our father, is still alive and well. And they bowed down, prostrating themselves before him. In this we see the word well. Is your father doing well? And that word well is actually the word shalom or shalom. And what he's asking is, there's the physical well-being. How is he doing? How is every aspect, his physical, his mental, his emotional, his spiritual, how is he doing? That's what this encompasses. David, when he was, after he had had his time with Bathsheba, and he brings Uriah back, and as Uriah is standing there before him in 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 7, he looks at Uriah and he says, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. Now, what's interesting is the word here, how, is actually the word shalom. That is the point where he's asking, he's saying, what the shalom of Joab, the shalom of the soldiers, the shalom of the war, how is it going? How is their well-being? Are they doing okay? We tend to limit our thinking of this to how, when we say how someone is doing, to the physical part of it, don't we? We kind of put it on this is what has happened to me. For example, you know, it's like someone walks up and they say, hey, how are you doing? And you're like, well, you know, I'm not doing so well. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, you know, what's going on? Well, you know, it's Christmas season and I felt I had to go out and I had to decorate because my neighbor's house looked really good and mine had nothing. So I was grabbing all of my stuff and I climbed up the ladder, and when I climbed up the ladder, it slipped. I fell down. I tweaked my ankle. I twisted it. I sprained it. I went to the doctor. Nothing was broken. So that was at least good. But I was really hurting and I had to keep going because I really was, you know, I was invested in this. And so I went into the garage. I grabbed this big box that was in there of all of the stuff. And when I stood up, I tweaked my back. And you know, and then that went out. Well, now I couldn't do anything. So all I could do was sit for the rest of the afternoon. But I needed to get some dud. There were bills that were on the table that were piling up. So I started doing the bills. I was putting them in the envelope. And I licked the envelope. And I got a paper cut on my tongue. And now it hurts to eat chips. We tend to kind of put, how are you doing in that level, don't we? But this is the great part of it. Our understanding is very limited. In John chapter 14, verse 27, Jesus says these words, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. I love that because he says, look, the peace that I leave with you, it's not the peace that you understand. It's not so limited to that. It's not just this ending of conflict. It's just not this idea of you not being hurt. It goes much deeper. It goes into your whole being. It goes into the fullness of who you are. It goes beyond a rough day. Imagine with me for all of eternity that there will be no anxieties. For all of eternity, there will be no mental illness. For all of eternity, you will never have to stress about finding the right Christmas gift for that person that you can never find the right gift for. You're never going to stress about bills being paid. You're never going to stress about any of this. All of that is gone. Look at Revelation 21:4. What a great passage. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. This is when he establishes his eternal kingdom. When the Prince of Peace takes on the throne, we will be whole for all eternity. We will never have to deal with pain or loss ever again. We will never have to deal with brokenness because our Shar Shalom, our Prince of Peace, is on the throne. And he has established wholeness and fullness. But you realize this isn't all that encompassed in shalom. We often look again, we say, well, yeah, it deals with the end of conflict. And I can understand that it deals with fullness and wholeness and well-being. But there's one more part of how this is. And it deals with prosperity. You know, again, one of the things that we tend to do is we tend to look at our greeting as a very broad greeting. You know, when someone says good morning, you just kind of go with it, right? Okay, good morning. I do enjoy the books and the movies of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And there's a scene in the one where Bilbo Baggins is out on his front porch and he's going through his mail and he's sitting there enjoying the beautiful morning, and Gandalf comes walking up to his gate and he stands there and we read this and says, good morning, said Bilbo, and he meant it. The sun was shining and the grass was very green, but Gandalf looked at him from under long, bushy eyebrows that stuck out farther than the brim of his shady hat. "What do you mean?" he said. "Do you wish me a good morning? Or mean that it is a good morning, whether I want it or not? Or do you feel good this morning, or that it is a morning to be good on?" "All of them at once," said Bilbo. And so they go into this discussion about what Gandalf was there and why he was coming along, and Bilbo doesn't have it. And a few lines later, Bilbo simply says, "Good morning," he said at last. "We don't want any adventures here, thank you. You might try over the hill or across the water." By this he meant that the conversation was at an end. "What a lot of things you do use good morning for," said Gandalf. "Now you mean that you want to get rid of me and that it won't be good until I move off." Good morning has a lot of things encompassed in it, doesn't it? Shalom is the same. You see, we understand the ceasing of conflict. We understand the fullness. But what about prosperity? Is that involved in this? Absolutely it is. Psalm 72, verse 7, we read these words. "In his day may the righteous flourish and prosperity abound till the moon is no more." Now, one of the cool things is I was looking at this prosperity. The word that we read as prosperity is actually the word shalom. Shalom. And he's saying right here that shalom encompasses this whole idea of prosperity. Let me go back to the phrase that we hear so much about, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And as a matter of fact, I'd encourage you, look at the passage from which we get that actually. It's found in Psalm 122, verses 6 through 9. Because what we tend to do is, again, we tend to say that it is all about the ceasing of conflict. But look at what the psalmist says about Jerusalem here. "Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure. May there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. For the sake of my family and friends, I will say, peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity." Here we see that it actually encompasses a whole lot more than battle that could be going on. You notice what he's saying. He goes, this is what I'm praying for within the walls of Jerusalem. Now, I've heard sometimes where people have said, you know, pray for the peace of Israel. That was taking that passage and broadening it out, because it is. It's pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And as a matter of fact, it's pray for the inner peace of Jerusalem. Pray for inside the walls. And what he's talking about is the whole idea, security, peace within the walls, prosperity. What happens to the people within the walls? And so we see this idea. In Job chapter 15, verse 21, Job says these words, "Terrifying sounds fill his ears. When all seems well, marauders attack him." Again, the word "well" there is the word shalom, and it's dealing with being in a place of comfort, being in a place of prosperity. When the marauders come and they pillage, they take away. In a time of blessing, they take what we have. As our Prince of Peace, for all eternity, we will experience the prosperity of God. You know, this is really amazing to think about. You go back to the Genesis story. You go back to Adam and Eve, and they're in the garden in the fall in chapter 3. And we see that as they were in the garden, they walked with God. And one thing that you notice is that they lacked nothing. As long as they were in the presence of God, they had everything that they needed. God said, hey, guess what? Everything that is here in the garden is yours. Only one thing you cannot do, do not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And so Adam and Eve, they had everything. They had no need, they had no want. They made the one choice to sin against God. And what was the curse that was laid on man? The curse dealt with prosperity. He looked at him and he said to the man, he goes, now here's what the deal is. From the sweat of your brow, you will now have to toil to live. You will have to work in order to have your needs met. and it's not going to be easy. You're going to have weeds, you're going to have thistles, you're going to have bad bosses, you're going to have terrible workers that work under you. You're going to have all of the problems that there are out there. It's not going to be easy. Being prosperous is not going to be easy. But when he returns to establish his eternal kingdom, imagine a time of prosperity for all eternity. Now, I can't tell you what this looks like. I can't sit there and say, well, you know, our bank accounts are going to be this, our houses are going to be this, and this is this, this. I don't know what it's going to look like, but one thing that I do know is that we will be taken care of. As a matter of fact, Paul in Romans chapter 8, verses 16 through 18, look at his words here. He says, the Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. If indeed we share in his suffering in order that we may also share in his glory, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. We are children of God, Paul says. And because we're children of God, we are therefore heirs. And it says co-heirs with Christ, so we have as a child of God. Now consider, what does God own? Everything. He says the whole world is mine. Everything in it is mine. Now imagine the God who has everything calls you his child. What's he going to give you? All that he has. Now again, I don't know what this is going to look like, and I don't want to go into the health and well stuff, but look at what this, get what this does say for us for all eternity. Never again for all eternity will we ever be in need and not know where our needs are going to be met. Never are we going to be sitting at our table, sleepless at night, trying to figure out how we're going to make ends meet because the money doesn't add up. Never are we going to have to sit there and go, what is going to be the food that is going to be on the table tomorrow because we have nothing and I have no way of purchasing. Never again are we going to be sitting there going, I can't even put gas in my gas tank. Never again are we going to worry over anything because the King of Kings, the Prince of Peace, is the one who brings us shalom, the prosperity of the Father. He shall be our wonderful counselor, our mighty God, all powerful. He shall be our Prince of Peace, our Shar Shalom. Now, one thing that I do understand is actually this time of the year is a very difficult time of year for many people. There's a wide variety, but actually we find that during the Christmas season, there's a spike in depression, there's a spike in suicide. It's because we need the Prince of Peace. But understand that when he comes to establish his throne, he will bring the everlasting peace, the eternal peace, the ultimate peace, not just the end of conflict. That'll be great, no conflict, but he will bring wholeness and fullness, no more anxiety, no more mental illness, no more problems that we deal with on that level. We will be whole and complete and full in Christ, and we will live in a time of prosperity for all eternity. This is what the Prince of Peace brings for us for all eternity. That night, there was a baby that was born in a manger. We don't celebrate just the meek, lowly, powerless baby. For unto us a child is born, and he shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and our Prince of Peace. And next week we're going to look at another one. Pastor Tim is bringing us Emmanuel, God with us. What an incredible story that we have to share. And my prayer is that as you celebrate Christmas this year, that you would celebrate the Prince of Peace and that you would bring that fullness, wholeness, and well-being and prosperity to those that need to hear it. Because he's way more than a baby in a manger. He's the King that's coming to establish his throne. Let's pray.